Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey everybody, it's Rick Hale with Paranormal Underground Radio. Unfortunately tonight, Karen, my dutiful co-host and sidekick, will not be joining us because apparently one of her kids has a Christmas concert. So, Karen, you will be missed tonight, but I am taking over and I don't need you. However, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Tonight I will be joined by one of my fellow investigators from the McHenry County Paranormal Research Group, a good friend, and quite possibly one of the best damn paranormal investigators it's ever been my pleasure to work with tonight. I'd like everybody to give a welcome to Vicky Gorski-Eicherl. How you doing, Vicky?
I'm doing good. Rick, you're so sweet. I appreciate you having me on. This is fun.
Oh, it's no problem. It's like actually you're doing me a solid. So that's what she said. Karen. So anyways, tonight we have a pretty decent show for you guys. We're not going to be live for the segment that we have, but a couple weeks ago we talked to Bill Murphy from, we talked to him again from Fact or Fake, the Paranormal Files. And tonight, if anybody's interested, and I'm sure you all are, tonight is the season finale of their show. So, Vicky, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? What brought you to, investigating the paranormal, favorite topping on a pizza, even favorite sex positions. The last one is not optional. So please, go ahead. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Vic?
Well, you know I'm not shy.
Yes, I know that.
I actually, my sister-in-law and I had been looking for a place in our area to investigate with. Mm-hmm. And we had the honor of running into Tony from McHenry County Paranormal Research Group. Mm-hmm. And met all of you guys, and we love it. It's not just something we do on the weekend. It's you guys are family. I mean, it truly is an extension of our families.
Oh, absolutely.
We have a blast, and I don't know. I like pepperoni.
All right. Very good, Vicky. All right. Cheryl, if you want to, we'll hit up that pre-tape with Bill Murphy. So take it away and play that funky music, white girl.
Okay. I just want to say while we're taping this that Rick recently yes. had a child. Congratulations, Rick. And
thank
his name
much.
Is Theo. And real quick, tell us more about Theo.
Theodore Nicholas Hale, he is going to be a week old as of, let's see, 4 a.m. Friday morning.
Wow.
And, you know, if there's anybody out there that has ever seen the birth of their child, and or if you haven't seen the birth of your own child, it is quite possibly one of the most magical experiences that you could possibly imagine. It's... You know, he was beautiful the instant he came out, and I love him so much. He is the cutest baby I've ever seen, and this is not just baby goggles, and I'm not thinking back to, you know, the Seinfeld episode of, oh, yeah, he's breathtaking, but everybody who sees him says, oh, my God, that is one of the cutest babies I've ever seen, so... This show tonight is for my little guy, Theodore, the future greatest paranormal investigator of all time.
All right. Woo.
He is a cute little baby boy. He's precious.
He is my buddy.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and start with Bill Murphy's interview. And I'm sure if you guys tuned in last time we talked to Bill, you'll enjoy this segment as well. He expands upon some of the things that we talked about last time. Here we go.
Hey, everybody. Welcome again to a week of Paranormal Underground. This is your host, Rick Hale, and I am here with my co-host, Karen Frazier. How you doing, Karen?
A little phlegmy. How are you?
Yeah, I know. You said that you weren't feeling too well. Well, again, we would like to welcome back Bill Murphy from Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake, The Paranormal Files. Welcome back to the show, Bill. How you doing?
I'm good, and thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Yeah, we really liked it the last time you were on. So, you know, so far it's been a really great season. You know, you guys have gone in and debunked some major videos that, you know, have been going around for the last couple of years. And, you know, so far, you know, it's nothing but good stuff.
I have to tell you, Bill, also, the last time we talked to you, I hadn't had a chance to see Fact or Fake yet, just with my freelance load has been so heavy. So I went back, like, the day after we talked to you, and I watched them all. It was on demand, or I paid for them on Amazon or something. And I loved watching you guys, and I actually then took my Polaroid camera that I still have on a ghost hunt just to see if I could get any ghost writing, and by golly, I couldn't.
Yeah, isn't that an amazing case, the Ghost Rider case?
It's probably the most fascinating thing I think you guys have done.
I'm glad you appreciated it as much as I did. It's a case that I've been following for a number of years, and it's one of the ones that I did present to everybody, and I was grateful that they decided to run with it, because it gave me the chance to do things with that case that I likely would not have been able to do otherwise.
So would you say that was your favorite investigation so far of this season?
That's a big question. Is it my favorite? Well, it's certainly one of my favorites because the case remains open. I mean, you know, when we tried to replicate the video, we weren't really able to do it to anybody's satisfaction, because even when we tried to pre-expose the film with a message, and when you then did the second exposure in the house, we got that, you know, strange ectoplasmic white material that obscured the message that we had put on there. So, you know, we really weren't able to totally solve it. So I like cases when they're open because it keeps the mystery alive.
Yeah. So was that like a big surprise to you when you guys tried to disprove it and pretty much turned out you were unable to?
Well, it was a surprise because we had tried it. We tried to do it first outside of the house. So you don't really get to see everything in the series because, you know, when you shoot 90 hours, you know, between 80 and 90 hours of material and you're only airing 22 minutes, then, you know, large blocks of material is being left on the the virtual cutting room floor. And so what you didn't see is that when we tried to do it, it really didn't work actually even outside the house, because even when you do a pre-exposure, it changes the tint across, you know, the entire Polaroid. And so it didn't work 100% outside of the house, but inside the house, it was a complete failure. And so that part was a surprise. You know, if you look closely at everybody's expression, you see a genuine surprise, because we kind of thought we had it maybe figured out, and we did not.
Yeah.
Have you heard of any other documented cases or any other cases where this happened or something similar?
There are two other cases involving Polaroids where images appear on the film after you expose it that you don't see when you shoot the photo. And even on the other two, Kodak got involved because they wanted to know if it's, you know, maybe a manufacturing error with the cameras or with the film, and they really weren't able to come back with an answer either. So it's really those three cases that are outstanding, but the Ghost Rider one is the only one that I know of that has actual writing. The other ones have images, and in one case, people that appear.
Is that the Mark Macy stuff that you're talking about as one of the cases that he takes the Polaroids in the presence of the Luminator?
No.
Okay.
What Mark Macy was doing was something different.
Okay.
With the Luminator. The IEL at the beginning is left out, so it's just Luminator as opposed to Illuminator. And what he does is something different. You know, he makes sure that there's no flash, and so it's a slightly darkened room when he does it. And he gets that somewhat of a double exposure where one of the images appears to be distorted. And I mention all that out loud. I know you guys know about the case, but to listeners who may not be familiar with it. And you can see examples of what Mark does at the worlditc.org website. And it's fascinating in its own right, but the Ghost Rider case stands above and apart from any other case involving Polaroids that I know of.
Interesting. Okay, thanks. I mean,
it's definitely one of the most fascinating cases on record of all time within the paranormal. You know, you guys have really taken a look at a lot of different stuff this season so far, Bill. So far, what would you say your biggest discovery is so far this season?
Well, let me think about that one as far as the biggest discovery goes, because those are big questions. I mean, it's kind of hard to really come back with a single answer. I guess the biggest discovery is that if I felt that I was confident going into a case, that I knew what it was that we were looking at in the video. The personal discovery that I've had is that how important it is for me to put those preconceived notions to the side. Because in one case in particular, and I don't want to mention it yet, because I think it's airing. It's the one that's airing this Thursday. I did have a preconceived notion of what it was that I was looking at. And so I kind of had to get over that. And once I got there, I realized there was another story. That you often don't really know the true nature of what's going on until you go to the location. So to people that say, well, geez, you know, we could have done this from our living room by looking at it and done this from internet research. I learned that's simply not the case. When you go to the location and you immerse yourself in the case, sometimes other information is revealed. And that's kind of like what happened on this case. I don't know what all is going to be actually aired. But suffice to say, there was a secondary story that made it very compelling in its own right.
Well, and I would imagine being on the scene also, intuition comes into play somewhat. And I'm talking intuition from a very brain science sense of the word, where you make a lot of decisions very fast just by processing information that you see, smell, touch, hear, as opposed to, you know, woo-woo psychic information or intuition.
Right.
Could you repeat the question?
Well, I was just saying, I would imagine also that when you go into a location live, as opposed to seeing something on YouTube or the internet or wherever you see it, when you're live, your intuition also comes into play.
Oh, most definitely. As a matter of fact, that plays a big part in how I approach a lot of the work that I do. Ignoring a gut feeling or an intuition or educated guess or firsthand knowledge, people have a tendency to, at least I do, have a tendency to suppress that.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you know something is wrong or you know something is right and you ignore it, it's a mistake.
Right.
And, you know, police often talk about having a cop's instinct. And that's something they develop over time. And they learn how to read a scene. They learn how to read a person. You know, most of the intelligence gathering doesn't involve words at all. It's feelings that they get. And I try to not suppress those feelings, although at one point in when I first started getting involved with paranormal research and investigating, I most definitely did try to put all that off to the side because I thought I was going to cloud the findings with my own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that was wrong. It's like, no, you do have to keep in touch with your feelings because we're so sensitive. Humans are very, very sensitive. In other cultures, they embrace those feelings. But in America, it's all about objective data, it seems.
Right.
Well, that was one of my biggest questions that I was going to have for you tonight, Bill. We seem to be getting away from you, especially on television. And I've actually met some paranormal groups that are very hostile to the thought or idea of using a medium or a psychic in their investigations. They're like, no, we can't use that. That's too subjective. We're looking for for objective results. Do you think that we're getting away from that balance there? I mean, if ghosts exist, then there must be people who are able to contact them and speak with them. Do you think that we're getting away from that?
Yes, I do. You know, and to kind of expand upon that idea, I was invited, there was a pilot that was being developed as a pitch piece for a different show before Factor Fate got the green light. And so I was contacted by this group, and here's kind of the irony of that show concept that was not picked up. I was the only one that was more science-minded. It was all psychics and mediums. And they brought me in as a person with instrumentation. And the thing was, I think it's valuable to keep somebody who is self-confident in their own ability to be sensitive and intuitive, as long as they don't necessarily share their information and their impressions at the beginning.
Right. I agree.
At the end, if there's going to be a round table with the team where you table everything and you go, let's look at what we've got here. Let's look at the impressions. Let's look at the evidence. Let's look at the witness interviews. That's the time to compare notes, not beforehand, because we all influence each other.
Right. Right. So do you think that it's like a major disadvantage to using a psychic, or is it an advantage?
It can be an advantage if it's kept separate. I mean, I'm very interested in understanding how people that feel that they're obtaining information psychically, how it works, what that mechanism is. So it does, I think, unfortunately, a lot of people that are out there doing that kind of work are kind of maybe shooting from the hip, and it may be misinformation, or maybe there's a tendency to tell people what they think that they want to hear. And somebody who's got some genuine gifts, you can't ignore that. I mean, I think it's readily acceptable that most people that have looked at the data from Princeton University with the Global Consciousness Project, that there is a mind-matter interaction that's going on. And there is a connection, and it's more emotion-based than logic-based. And so if you can accept that you can affect the world and through just the power of the mind, or as I mentioned, the power of the emotion, then the opposite should be true as well. Then the world should affect the mind and emotion of people that are tuned to the world.
Right.
So I'm interested in it. It has not been the focus of my research. I've done some self-development. But it's not where I choose to put the brunt of my effort. What I try to do is try to collect evidence I can present to others, as opposed to presenting my impressions.
Oh, absolutely. You know, back to the show, Bill. You know, are there any cases in particular that you, you know, like would like to investigate on the show in the future? Does anything really come to mind?
Two things come to mind that we haven't done that I would like to see done. And one of them was a video that actually I presented to the team. I wasn't able to rally a consensus to make it a case to go after, but it's an alien abduction case.
Okay.
And you know, normally that kind of stuff, you know, speaking of psychic impressions, I have been leaning towards that these are feelings that people get of abductions, and maybe it's a psychic abduction. Their minds are being hijacked as opposed to a physical abduction.
Right.
And it's if you have any evidence of it, which is extremely scarce, anything that's recorded, then it's a case I'd like to go after, but it's really very, very difficult. So it's been a challenge for the show to get the compelling video. You certainly have the available witnesses that make the statements that they feel that they are abductees. So that's one of the components, but the first component, and that's the compelling evidence, is largely missing. If we find it, it's a case I want to do, assuming we can get clearances on the locations and everything.
Right.
So that's certainly, you know, one that that comes to mind.
Okay. You know, with the show, is there, you know, anything in store for next season that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think you're going to see a continued evolution of team interaction.
Okay.
It's something that you started to see in season 1-5, the one that's just completing now. You're seeing where we're now more comfortable with each other. We feel free to disagree a little quicker, whereas before, you know, you put in six people in the room and there's the politeness factor you have to contend with. Even though we all became familiar with each other, and most of us started to know each other quite well off the show, there's still that desire to not be rude. But as it moves forward, some of those disagreements can, you know, maybe I think will come to the surface. I'm not saying that nobody's, you know, having an argument or anything like that. It's just, you know, what's the right approach? What's the right case? We're more ready to call out a case that another person brings if you know about it and not so sugarcoat it, because we have a lot of cases that we look at and we try to move through them as quickly as we can. When we do zero in on one that kind of got everybody's interest, that's the one that we'll elaborate on. So you are going to see some of those disagreements, and I think you're going to see, now that we have a little more time, now that season 2 has been given the green light.
Yay! Good.
Yay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I actually got the press release on that. Come to think of it, I put it up and said, yay, in my blog, so never mind.
Yeah. Oh, now that I've made that statement, you know, that the season 2 has been picked up, and yeah, they did send out the press release and stuff, so it's not like brand new information, but
right.
It does give us a little more advanced notice than we had for season 1-5,
right.
So more thoughts can go into more sophisticated ways to try to replicate the evidence. So those are the two things, more sophisticated tests and more team evolution, as I mentioned.
Yeah. See, I think that's a, you know, you use the term replicate, Bill. Something that I'm interested to know about the show is, on the show you guys do a lot of experiments where you try to replicate the video, you know, try to replicate the phenomenon, more or less. Do you think, or in your personal opinion, that if you can replicate the original phenomena, does that explain it? Or does it just show that we're able to do whatever it is that the paranormal is able to do?
No, it we can't say definitively that it explains it. If it's a simple experiment and it does replicate well, then that is the more likely explanation for what it is that we're observing in the video. And that's really all we're trying to put forth, that this is the most likely explanation for what it is. I mean, you know, you don't want to go, as much as we love to embrace the paranormal, we don't want to go there unless we explore everything else. And you're coming from, that statement has come from a person who embraces the notion of the paranormal, but it's a really bold statement to say that's a paranormal event. The burden of proof is very high.
Right.
By the same token, you know, we're ignorant as a civilization to most of the things that we're observing around us. I mean, we're not that old as far as a civilization goes. We're really not. I mean, you know, we have hopefully tens of thousands of years of advancements that we'll be making, and then hundreds of thousands maybe compiled on top of that. And then we can say, hey, we know a lot. But right now, our science is primitive, our knowledge is primitive, and things are considered paranormal, and then you form a theory, and then you test a theory, and you prove it, and now it's no longer paranormal. I mean, you know, there's examples that can be cited like that. Every time there's a scientific breakthrough,
it's
based on what was previously theory, and the history books are just full of examples.
So that leads to the question then, do you think that what's going to happen ultimately at the paranormal will be no longer paranormal because there will be scientific explanations for it?
Well, it depends on what category of paranormal you're talking about. It's such a huge subject.
Sure. Let's say ghosts.
Well, there's a couple of things that have to happen before you can, before that premise will be readily accepted by the masses. And let's put aside for a moment those whose beliefs are faith-based, because that's already intact. Now you look at the notion of a consciousness surviving the death of the body, which I think describes what a ghost would be.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, you have to zero in on where thought occurs. Does it occur outside of the body? Is the brain just the switchboard for the body, and thought occurs someplace in the ether? If you're able to identify where thought actually occurs, and it's not between the ears, then you can move on to the next step, and that would be, well, what if the host, the body, then dies? Does that consciousness continue to exist, and can we continue to communicate with it? So I think the first breakthrough would be discovering if thought is local or non-local.
Right.
Right. That's a whole idea of consciousness.
Well, and that's certainly a debate. You know, there are definite camps about what consciousness is, whether it's just synapses firing in your body and chemical reactions, or whether there's a outside of the body element to it. I actually find that debate fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I do too. I find it very fascinating, and there are small breakthroughs in that area going on right now.
Yeah.
Again, it kind of goes back to mind-matter interaction, because the mind is, it's real to you, it's real to me, it's real to anybody that's able to communicate and experience, but it's not tangible. You can never put your hands on it. So it's not a physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
The mind isn't thoughts, aren't emotions, laughter. Well, laughter is the expression, you know, of emotion, but it's those things you can never really put your hands on. And so even the subject is very slippery.
Right.
I'm not totally convinced that it is necessarily local, but, you know, the evidence is starting to build up to suggest that maybe it isn't. Even if it's not local, if it's not held captive in your body, it may still require the host to live.
Right.
So anyway, breakthroughs are happening. It's being relied on right now for robotics and such, and to build for cyborgs to exist, for artificial limbs to function. You know, it's kind of reliant on that, like the phantom limb. A person has to be able to feel the arm that isn't there to control the prosthesis.
Right.
So, you know, that we could continue with that conversation, but it's a very large subject, and I find it to be so intriguing. You know, medical science is where a lot of breakthroughs are happening.
Yeah, well, and quantum physics, I know, is also looking at consciousness and whether there's a quantum element to consciousness. And that's sort of the winning theory for me right now, is that there's something quantum going on there that we just haven't quite put our fingers on yet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh. You know, Bill, I wanted to get away from the show, and we wanted to talk about your ITC research and investigations. This weekend at an investigation that I was at, I actually did an ITC two ITC sessions, actually. And you're kind of one of the people that's leading the charge on this. Can you tell us, what are your goals, and how exactly do you run an ITC investigation for those of us who don't know what it is?
Before I answer, let me ask you a question. What form of ITC was being used this weekend when you were president?
I just asked him the same thing.
Oh, I was using the video loop.
Oh, great. That's yeah. One of my favorites, actually.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I like video feedback loop, but...
Mm-hmm.
With that said, ITC work is something that I do on a strictly experimental basis. If we don't experiment, we're not going to make those breakthroughs. So
right.
ITC is actually, it's a wonderful way to combine a person's desire to... expand their ability to be intuitive,
mm-hmm.
with a way to you externalize it in ITC. So the experimenter is always going to be a part of that equation of ITC, because it's not objective. It's
right.
your interpretation, but it's the same thing in any paranormal research. There's mm-hmm. it's always going to be subject to interpretation, even EVPs. You know, you don't label an EVP, and you have 100 people listen to it, you're going to get many, many different answers for the most common EVPs. And so I'm not talking about a classic EVP where everybody hears the same voice,
right.
assuming
right.
they speak the language that the message is delivered in. But,
mm-hmm.
it's not strictly objective.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be. ITC is prone to that, and so some of the controls I like to have in place is to have a team of people. And it's the same thing I mentioned at the beginning of this call, where I don't necessarily want everybody to shout out what they're hearing or seeing at mm-hmm. that moment, unless it's something you have to do, like, for example, in a video feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a compelling image and you've got somebody that's running the recording of the session, you know, you have to at least yell out timestamp, so we know where to go back and look at the footage, because
right.
it can be laborious to go back and, you know, look at frame after frame.
Oh, God,
I love ITC, though. I really do. I think it's good. It's got its place. It does not have a place in for what the majority of this type of work calls for,
mm-hmm.
but it certainly has its place. It's something I do... Personally, I do it on the side. I've tried to introduce to the show. We have done ITC sessions during the show, and they've never made it to air.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, that's just the thing. With anything that deals with paranormal research and investigation, there's oftentimes going to be, a crowd of debunkers. And, what is your response to people who refuse to acknowledge the possibility of a genuine phenomenon of working with this kind of communication, and they're kind of willing to throw the baby out with the bathwater just because ITC focuses on chaotic data streams for its functionality? What are your thoughts on that?
I would have to answer that I think it's presumptuous to say one person's approach is superior to another person's, particularly when you're dealing with theoreticals in the first place.
Right.
It's all idea driven, and
mm-hmm.
to say that I've got a better way of being engaged in an ITC session than the next person does, or for that matter, maybe that person doesn't want to be involved in ITC. Maybe they just like EVPs and video and photos, and for them. that's solid evidence, yet ITC is not, you know, I think that's choosing to keep the blinders on.
Right.
And if we don't experiment and don't keep trying new things, the field will can stagnate. Yeah. I'm shocked on how little it's advanced, actually, since the 1920s, when photography, people were using infrared photography, actually, in the 1920s.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
They were putting IR-sensitive plates, and they were photographing sessions with spiritualists, when spiritualists would expel what they called then ectoplasm, which they thought was a manifestation of a spirit.
Right.
And people would go in there and they would take these photos with IR plates and to try to see if there was something that they could see that they could not see otherwise. They also, with their rising, actually, I've got a newspaper article that I have laminated from like 1926 of, it was, and I wish I had it at my fingertips. I should have anticipated this, but Anita, my wife, and I've been running around all day. I would have loved to have gotten this article together so I could read to you the names of people involved with it. But they were saying that spirits and ghosts can enter a dwelling through the wiring of the structure. And as they move through the structure, they cause the lights to blink and they cause other electrical malfunctions. It's not too far from what we're doing today, both with night vision and with EMF detection.
That's true.
Right.
And
yeah.
So we need to work hard to sort of think outside the box, break through, try to make some progress, not just rely on what the people have done as before. Although, with that said, I know my work relies on people publishing their work. I like to do research. I like to see what somebody else's data says and how much of it's been accumulated. And, you know, you just try to come up with it. Educate yourself. So it's important to look at the work that's before us, but the only way to really advance is to kind of, you know, look away from this, the previous work where maybe they're not getting enough results to come to a true conclusion to try a different way. And that's what we try to do on the show. I know you didn't want to get away from the show. That's what we try to do. We try to try different experiments, based on popular theories, as well as our own theories, to see if we can replicate a video. And I find it actually to be a good way to investigate. This whole replication process that we do, I've come to really appreciate.
So do you think that the current level of skepticism that's kind of fashionable in the paranormal right now, do you think that that's part of what's holding things back as far as advancing in new ideas and thinking outside of the box?
Well, I mean, I'd have to counter that idea by saying, I don't know if it's a rash of skeptics that have come to the surface. I think they've always been there. I think, as a matter of fact, there's more of an acceptance of the notion of the paranormal. I think that's what's becoming more mainstream, and I think that's a really good development, because more talented people and more developers will feel that they have permission and the okay from not only their peers that they work with, but society in general, to go ahead and sort of, you know, present their findings publicly and present their devices publicly. So, yeah, I think there's going to always be skeptics out there, and the cynics are the ones that I think they're shortchanging themselves. The skeptics, if it's healthy, then it has its place.
Right.
But I think the paranormal is becoming more widely accepted.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Okay, so let's talk about paranormal documentaries. Do you have anything that you have in the works, Bill?
I do, and as a matter of fact, I've got several of them. I've got four different ones that are in various stages, and I actually really thought by now I would have had at the very least one, but I kind of thought I was going to have maybe two of them already released by now. But the show has kept me busy, and after the show, Anita and I have been staying quite busy traveling around the country, going to various conferences. So what I am doing right now is racking up a lot of airline miles, but I'm not getting all my my documentary release that I want to get out there. Because I like going out there and talking to people and meeting people, and I like doing experiments that involve the attendees. It's a good way to test an idea, to test a theory. And it's not that often I can assemble 150 people, except at these conferences, and then ask for volunteers that have been COVID and willing to be a part of it. So we've been traveling a great deal, and that has put delayed me releasing my own stuff.
Right. Well, I would imagine that it would.
I'm going to be releasing some of those, so check my website often, because you are going to see some updates coming on my site, because there's some other things that are going to appear on there on my website aside from my DVDs. So do check ghosttown.tv.
Cool.
Okay. So, you know, Bill, basically as a whole, what are your thoughts on the state of the paranormal field right now, you know, going beyond skeptics and cynics and believers? You know, where do you see this going in the future?
Well, I think the topics themselves are, it's getting broader, and you're seeing maybe a convergence of different sciences, and that's I take that as being a real positive step. And I think, certainly, you know, regarding my own work, I'm realizing how small we are as far as individuals, and we have to start thinking, you know, what's influencing us. And so it's kind of getting, it started with the bird's eye view. You know, let's look at this little incident. Now look from the top of the room. Now look from the top of the building. Now look at the city. Now look at the whole state. And then you end up looking from the upper atmosphere of everything that's influencing the environment. And so every time you take a step up, there's other disciplines that get involved, other factors that get involved. And I think all those other sciences being included in forming notions are only helpful. And there's breakthroughs all the time that are really, really relevant to what we do here on the ground, in the room, you know, to get that down to our level. It's important to look at all these other breakthroughs, the stuff that's going on, you know, outside of our atmosphere, and stuff that you have to look at what's going on, you know, subatomic. So you got to pay attention to all the sciences.
Well, I always think that I always like to think of it as a pretty big breakthrough whenever, you know, scientists, they discover new species of animals that were, you know, previously hidden from us humans in the past. Do you foresee, you know, in the field of cryptozoology, do you think that there will be any breakthroughs in finding, you know, a corpse of a Bigfoot or, you know, whatever? Do you see any breakthrough in, I guess the question I'm asking is, which discipline within the paranormal realm do you see there being greater breakthroughs?
Well, I think what we're going to see right now is the ability to gather evidence is going to get better. Like when you look at the stuff that Keith Engel is doing with his full spectrum cameras, by making it more readily available at a price that more people can afford to get in on, then more evidence is going to be accumulated and distributed to everybody to chew on. And those are some of the breakthroughs that are going to happen, getting it into the hands of the masses. And that's why I'm glad to see that there, you know, what I'm observing is a bit more of a mainstream acceptance of paranormal in general. You know, we're not really outsiders anymore like we used to be.
That's true.
It used to be, like, even in the television engineering community, where I've spent a lot of time, I didn't necessarily want to talk about this kind of stuff. I really didn't. But now, it's fine to talk about it. It's fine to talk about it, because everybody has a story.
Yes.
The television shows have actually helped educate people, just even to the ideas of it, and people don't roll their eyes so much anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I find they tend to pull you aside once they find out what you do and say, hey, I got something to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. Yeah, that's more likely the response now. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, I think that I've had more people ask me questions in the last couple of years than I have in the 28 years that I've been researching the paranormal and the 20-plus years that I've been investigating. It just seems now that it's, you know, cool to be a nerd, I suppose.
It is. I mean, it is cool to be a nerd. You're right. The whole art imitating life kind of came true when Revenge of the Nerds, that movie, came out, and it was like, wow, these are the ones that were able to figure out how to strike back. Well, it kind of happened a bit differently, but the idea remained the same, that people that can think their way through are the ones that really come out grabbing the trophy, in my opinion.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it is okay to be a nerd, but I think it's also really okay to use our own senses as well. I mean, it's you can be a nerd and you can use technology, but you better know how to use it.
Right.
Because if you can't operate your gear and you can't calibrate it and you can't read it, then you're going to get incorrect information. I mean, you know, everybody can make mistakes. I've made mistakes. I'm sure some of you have maybe made mistakes just trying to read some of the instrumentation that we use.
God, yeah.
Like, constantly.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first time I used a thermal camera. I was hugely embarrassed because I was looking into a backyard from the interior of a house with a thermal camera. And I was seeing my own reflection, signature with a thermal camera in the glass. And I would move the camera away, and I'd go, I don't see anybody back there. And I put the camera back up, and there would be this figure again. Then I realized it was myself. I was like, oh my gosh, I gotta really, you gotta know your gear.
Yeah,
you really do.
Well, you don't want to look like an idiot to the people that are looking to you for answers. That's the way I see it.
That's true. I mean, but we do all learn from each other. I mean, it's hard for one person to master all the stuff that's out there. So mistakes will happen. That's why, in my opinion, you really can't discount your own feelings and your own intuition. I mean, as much as I tried to do that, I've kind of come full circle. And so now both halves are fully online. My logic side and the side that's in touch with intuition, I try to keep access to both.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan.
Well, I have, I don't know if you would agree with this, and you probably, but a lot of times when I have people who are like, you know, I'm thinking about going on a ghost hunt, or I'm thinking about, you know, going on a monster hunt, and, you know, what kind of gear do I need? And, you know, before I tell them that, you know, they need to break out the EMF detectors and the digital camcorders or whatever, I always tell people that go with what you think. Your brain is your greatest tool, and as well as your body. Would you agree with that, Bill?
Oh, absolutely.
I
mean, there's what happens like to the wartime photographer who looks through the viewfinder on his camera to get the shot, and he's so busy focused on what he's framing up, he kind of forgets that he's actually part of the battlefield as well.
Right.
Right.
And he misses things, including bullets.
Right.
And that's something that you've got to stop for a moment. I actually do it at every location that I have the good fortune of going to. I will always take a moment to stop, and I'll often just close my eyes even, and just try to listen and feel the location. And you can get other information that way. It's not like I ignore the need to record so I can review later.
Right.
But I do allow myself to become fully immersed in a location, and that's something I would recommend anybody just stop and take a moment to do. And it surprises me how much is actually going on when you stop focusing on one piece of gear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're everything. You're even aware of the cross-contamination that's going on between people.
Yeah. Right. Well, I always do my first walkthrough, at least my first walkthrough, without any equipment in my hand at all, just because that's sort of how I get a sense of what the location is. So
that's a good approach.
Yeah.
Well, you could be busy recalibrating your IR cameras or your tri-field meter, and all the same, at the while, you're missing the candlestick moving across the table of its own accord. You can't throw that balance out. You got to have balance, otherwise the universe doesn't work, according to Taoism. That's just how it is.
Maybe what you do is you have the teams go in, only one person takes equipment, and the other person just walks, and looks, and you know, you work in teams of two, and one person has equipment and the other person doesn't.
Sure.
That's why when you asked at the beginning about the idea of a person who's maybe feels that they're sensitive, having a person on board like that, there's nothing really wrong with it. I mean, I don't necessarily like the idea of a medium isn't something that I pursue, but having somebody that is sensitive and can tune in the environment is something that I do think is important. And just like you're saying, you do your first walkthrough without anything, you know, having somebody just as the witness to everything that's occurring, you can catch a lot that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, and I'm actually sitting here feeling a little chagrined that that's never occurred to me, that maybe there should be a person who's not looking at equipment.
Yeah,
and you know, sometimes even setting up surveillance cameras, if you don't have enough people, you know, you're lacking personnel, you put surveillance cameras on, you can kind of catch things in a review that way. I know in my own documentaries, I've gotten stuff that I've had to throw out because on surveillance, I saw things that happened. We thought we got a really good EVP when this one woman was asking questions. This is in Louisiana. And then I realized that there was a person that was, after looking at surveillance footage, while the EVP was being recorded, there was one of the other people, it was actually a guy I brought in, one of the crew guys. He was wearing one of those vinyl, like, raincoats.
Oh.
And there's, like, a texture to it. Mm. And he was just walking by when she was recording, and it made this, like a breathing sound. Like right now I'm wearing like a fleece sweater, so it won't do that zip sound, but it kind of sounded like a, like somebody answered her, like a high is,
yeah,
like that. When she asked, she was asking for contact. He was like, wow. I mean, this is like, the timing is, it's like right there. But then when I saw the footage, it's like, oh, this was just this poncho rubbing on itself.
Oh, I know. But it's good to find those things, too, because that then gives you something more as far as an experience the next time you hear something.
Yeah, and that's what, see, the cameras serve the purpose of the of the witness, observing everything.
Very
but
good.
It's good to have people there as well. That way you don't have to go through so much footage of somebody catches something on the spot and then can call it out.
Right.
When something happens, somebody makes a noise. Like, I know I will do that during an EVP session or even at the conferences that Anita and I just went to. You know, if you have 35, 40, 50 people and you're trying to do a controlled EVP session with one person maybe asking the questions, if you're watching everybody in the crowd and you have people whispering, I would just say it out loud. I'd say, that's somebody in the third row whispering.
Yeah.
Not an EVP. And then it kind of, it would remind everybody, even though I already mentioned at the beginning, it would remind everybody that whispering like that can lead to false positives. And
yeah,
you know, speak in a normal tone, so it's no mistake.
Yeah, I narrate everything that I do. You know, well, that was me unzipping my jacket.
Yep. Well, usually what I do right before an EVP session, if I'm working with another person or two other people, I'll have them say something aloud, and then I'll have them say something whispering. That way there's no contamination involved.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. That way
idea.
You get the two. So
yeah, especially if you're investigating with people that you have not investigated with before. I know that listening to audio when I go out and investigate with a team that's not my own is more difficult because there are voices that I'm not used to hearing.
Right.
And so I have to listen a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Bill, tell me what you think about devices like the Frank's Box or the Ghost Box.
It's another ITC device. Mm-hmm. So, it's, mm-hmm. I was certainly a very early adopter of Frank's Box.
Mm-hmm.
So, I enjoy using them. I have used them on episodes of the show, and mm-hmm. again, they didn't air those segments because it doesn't necessarily advance the storyline
right.
of an episode of us trying to replicate the video. It's something that we'll do because we're trying to learn about the location. It is easy for skeptics to criticize something like a Frank's Box or mm-hmm. anything that is so chaotic. It,
mm-hmm.
But I like to compare it to, you know, any sort of scrying that you're doing.
Right.
Where
you're just interpreting, I know I mentioned this earlier, but it's how I think people are able to externalize what they may already know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they're listening to Frank's Box or Shack Hack or whatever the swept tune device is, and they're getting messages. They may already be carrying those messages, but now they've given themselves permission to say, this is what the box said. Well,
good idea.
The box said it, but you were saying it all along. And it's part of being confident in what you know and confident in what you feel, because even in box sessions, I kind of do the same thing. If I want to really learn from a box session, I try not to have anybody say out loud what they're hearing until, you know, we end the session. And and I do short burst sessions, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do anything lengthy at all.
Just they're hard to listen. Minutes. Yeah, they're hard to listen to for any length of time anyway.
I've been doing swept tune radio, though, for a long time, since the 70s.
I remember you said you used to do it as a kid without realizing what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that,
it's not like somebody taught me or somebody showed me. It was just my dad's shortwave that was there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing it anyway and just kind of listening to, you know, what happens when you sweep the band.
Right.
And then hearing phrases that made sense, but I wasn't necessarily putting as much validity into it then.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to learn from the process.
Right.
Frank has automated that process.
Right.
You know, I was just going to say, I know that for me, when it comes to the Ghost Box or the Frank's Box or whatever, I'm highly skeptical on it. I've never actually worked with it myself, but I've seen people work with it, and not just on television. I don't know. I mean, the idea of, 12 or 15 different radio stations being scanned, it just seems like anything random could possibly come across as sounding, oh my God, this is, you know, a spirit talking to us. I mean,
yeah, that's why I would never base an important decision off of any form of ITC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I may find it enjoyable, and mm-hmm. I may find it as, you know, a great way to experiment, but I would certainly not put the kind of weight into it that would, affect somebody's life.
Right.
Right.
I would never do that. But, you know, I do applaud Frank for coming up with the idea of automating the process.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't come up with the idea of actually sweeping the band. I mean, that actually has been going on for a long time. It actually got, it had its first wave of popularity in the late 80s.
Hmm.
And then, you know, Frank started experimenting with it at the end of the 90s, like, oh, I can do this automatically.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like, hey, this is great. This is somebody that's thinking, you know, to excuse the pun, outside the box and developing something that
right.
now, like it or not like it,
mm-hmm.
it's part of our vernacular. You know, we all know about swept tune radios and Frank's Box, and so he's affected a lot of people. It's polarizing, so you either get people that say, nope, don't want to do it at all, and shame on those who do, or you get mm-hmm. people who go, you know, these are relevant messages and all of us get them. Or you get people like me who go, this is a great way to experiment, and hopefully it'll lead to other people having the guts to come up with something themselves.
Right. Well, you know, what happens with any kind of experimentation is often you don't get answers out of experimentation. What you get are more questions, but at least you get new questions to ask.
You got to at least try.
That's right. That's right. So, Bill, I know we're running up against your time here, and you've been really nice to talk with us again.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
Tell us what you have coming up in the near future.
Well, I kind of hinted at it a little bit before when I was talking about how combining different sciences, mm-hmm. and that I like to go to the conferences and do experiments. There's some stuff that they're going to be doing. It's fairly exotic, mm-hmm. and I like bringing new technology to the public. Out of respect for non-disclosure with some of the developers, I probably can't go into great detail, but suffice mm-hmm. to say, there are things that Anita and I will bring to these public venues that everybody can participate in to enjoy mind-matter interaction in a very, very thought-provoking way.
Wow, that sounds really cool. And so when that happens, will that be something you'll be posting on your website or making public?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to make it public. And it's because I wanted to start nicking away at the notion that we started to touch upon earlier, that where does thought occur?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That direction that I'm taking it.
Oh, my gosh, exciting.
Wow.
Okay, that's one of my favorite subjects, so I'm going to be watching your website, which is, can you give it out for our listeners again?
3 W's, then .ghosttown.tv.
All right, very good.
Definitely be checking it out.
Okay, and how many more episodes do we have to go with Fact or Faked for this season?
You know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think this is it.
Oh, this is it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is it. I mean, I've been traveling so much, to be honest with you. I have to go to the production company to go get the DVDs of this whole cycle because I haven't even seen all of them. Mm-hmm. We've been on the road constantly. I mean, constantly. Mm-hmm. We have four big suitcases that we're cycling between, and we empty one and we grab another one. It's been that hectic for us, which is a good thing. We're very, very grateful to be busy. We're grateful to the show and to those that I've been able to meet at these conferences that we go to when we're on the road. So we've been on the road so much, I've been missing stuff. But I do think that this is the... Is it? Yeah, I think this, it's wrapping up this week, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that a shame? I've kind of lost track. Oh, gosh.
Well, that's okay. And the good thing is this, that they are available on demand. And also, I believe Amazon.com has them on demand for like $1 a piece or something if you miss them and want to watch them. That's usually how I catch up on every show is when I have a block of time, I spend 99 cents a pop and watch all the shows. So I'll look forward to seeing the second half of the season, Bill.
Well, you know, thank you for watching. The new stuff is going to be really good, too. The new cases are that are being considered right now. And again, we still have to present them to each other and form that consensus. But some pretty good videos that we're looking at.
Yeah,
and
cool.
Some good experiments. So it's going to be a great season, too. And for those that that enjoy coming out to the conferences, let's see. I think I'm scheduled to go to two of them already for 2011. We went to, gosh, I think four of them all in the past 2 months. So we've been really, really busy. But watch for some of the new experiments we're going to be doing with the public, and I would love to hear people's feedback once they experience what it is we're going to be bringing them.
Oh, can't wait, Bill. And you'll come back again and talk about that after you get that all done, you think?
Oh, yeah, cool. Definitely.
Great. Okay, well, thank you for taking time out of your really busy schedule and also with your really bad cold. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Well, yeah, thanks for coming back on, Bill.
We just thank DayQuil because it got it through. I know as soon as I hang up, it's going to be like, uh-oh, I need a new cap full. But really appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
Yes, thanks, Bill.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hi, this is Nick Redfern, and you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Are we back?
Yep.
We're back.
Oh, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground. I just wanted to say thanks to Nick Redfern for that. And I hope that everybody enjoyed the interview that we pre-taped with Bill Murphy. He's a really intelligent guy. He really knows what he's talking about. And I actually think that he's somebody that I could learn from. So anyways, we're going to be... Vicky, are you still with us?
I am.
Hey, welcome back, Vicki. Vicki, we're going to, and all of our listeners, we're going to be going to Andy Selfridge. So if he is a police officer, ladies and gentlemen, so hide the weed. Hey, Andy, what's going on?
How's it going, Rick? You're doing pretty good.
Pretty good, buddy. Good.
So,
thank you very much. Thank you. So what kind of neat new goodies do you have to put under the Christmas tree for paranormal investigators out there?
Well, I tell you what, it's always a never-ending flow of stuff. Now, if I could just get my budget to match my desires there, that would be all right. But, man, what a great interview with Bill Murphy. I find ideologically, especially with ITC, that we really have a lot in common. Mm-hmm. And before I get too far in tonight, I should publicly state my position on ITC. I think it's a very cool way to experiment and try new ideas in the subjective realm, because at this time, it's so hard to differentiate between the chaos of the data streams and what may be a legitimate message. But I am hooked on it. It's something I do kind of on the side. We certainly wouldn't ever use any of these items on a client-based investigation.
Yeah.
And but I have seen some pretty compelling stuff. So my favorite thing to do is audio ITC, be it ghost box type stuff or this newer ECM stuff that we'll be talking about tonight.
Okay. Yeah, you know, a couple of weeks ago I did a video loop ITC at an investigation, and I got absolutely nothing. So it was kind of a bummer, you know. I was really hoping that I would get some kind of image or some kind of voice, but, you know, why don't you share with us what you have tonight, Andy?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you had mentioned that. When I first started messing around with ghost box research, I had a lot of luck, very compelling stuff in the very beginning, and I kind of equate that to the Zen beginner's mind thing. Mm-hmm. But I find that these days I don't have quite as good communication.
Right.
But, of course, people familiar with the ghost box know that it uses the audio chunks from radio stations as it sweeps through the band. Now, the approach is logically, it just doesn't make any sense that an entity would be precognitive enough to know where to stop the scan or pause the scan, the specific bits to make the message he wants to send. Well, these ECM devices by Bill Chappell, basically what they do is they take EMF values, and as the sensor reads the voltages, they do an analog to digital conversion and assigns it to either a phoneme or a dictionary word that's pre-programmed into it.
Okay.
And so you got a little bit of the entity has to have the precognitive, or not necessarily precognitive knowledge, but a good enough working to know, working knowledge of the device to know what voltage values correspond with the word or syllable he's trying to say, he or she's trying to say. So it really kind of gets crazy when you think of it like that. But these devices are interesting. And I recently picked up a PX, which is kind of like a transitional device between the Ovilus and the Ovilus 2, which was just released, I think it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys ever used any of these devices?
I haven't. Vicki, have you ever used anything like that?
No, I haven't. Actually, I'm listening because it's interesting to me. I like hearing about the equipment part of it.
Right. You know, Andy, I'd have to say I'm kind of on a little bit on the skeptical side when it comes to the Ovilus or, you know, the PX device. It's if you get an entity that's, you know, 600 years old haunting some musty old castle in Scotland, Ireland, or England or whatever, and you hold this thing out to them and you say, okay, now speak through it, they're going to look at you like you're crazier than they are.
Yeah, what is that device?
Yeah, exactly. What is that? I don't understand even how you're, you know, the language that you're speaking, more or less. So, I mean, you get a 600-year-old entity that's speaking Old English or transitional English. How is it that they are even able to use these kind of devices?
And that's the mystery in itself, and I'll tell you what I think is happening, based on my experience, is I think that we, the operator, are influencing device in some way. Now, I'm not smart enough to know exactly, you know, what voltages are assigned to what word and what have you. Mm-hmm. But I think it's some sort of latent PK element from the operator themselves.
Okay.
I've had this device for, I think, about a couple months now, maybe about a month and a half. And I've seen some, or rather heard some, pretty interesting things, but they all seem to be situationally pertinent to what's happening with me at the time.
Can I interject something?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Spirit is energy. And whether you existed 500 years ago or 5 days ago, you still have a certain tone inflection in your voice. And you know different tones that you need to get across to get different points across. So I can actually wrap my head around that. Andy, do you know what I'm saying?
I agree, but I also think that it would take such a long period of trial and error for that particular external entity to figure out exactly what sequence and how to manipulate the device to make a coherent message. That's why, personally, I like to use the phonetic mode. So it chops it up into little phoning-like syllables. And doing that, I feel I'm making them work harder, but it's a little bit, I think, easier if that type of interaction is possible. And plus, one thing I've noticed about dictionary mode, where it assigns a word for every EMF value, is that you'll just see constant word repeats based on your baseline. So, okay. And there's not any intelligent message there. It's just simply repeating minute fluctuations there. So.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the PX used recently on Ghost Adventures, and you know, where they were talking to an entity that lived, being 50 or 60 years ago or whatever, if in fact they were speaking to this entity. And, you know, even watching the show, I mean, nothing to say against, you know, Zach, Nick, and Aaron. I think they're all three great guys, and I think that they're really enthusiastic. But, you know, like I said, I'm really skeptical concerning these, you know, new devices that come out. I mean, but then again, I was skeptical about EVP 10 years ago.
Well, you know, it seems like everybody I talk to that has actually used these devices, they seem to have great sessions with what they believe to be external forces, be it ghosts or what have you, but basically an energy external to them in the session. I can't say I've been so lucky. Had some pretty interesting things, like was driving underneath an overpass, and it said under. I would pull up a page on the computer, and I'll have it running in the background. I pulled up a news channel page, and then it would say news. You know, just little things like that where it kind of makes you bat your eye for a second, but nothing I can say definitively as any form of intelligent communication or message.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, the logical part of us tries to rationalize it.
You
try to wrap your head around it, and you try to, I mean, it's common, I think it's human nature to try to rationalize it and make it something tangible. If it's not something tangible, you know, you try to figure out what it is, and you usually try to figure your way out of it.
And I've noticed that with ghost boxes, with that type of equipment, that the harder you try to figure out the dynamics of a communication session, the worse results you would get. However, if you just kind of let go, things seem to flow more naturally, and you start to see trending in your messages and stuff like that. So, I mean, it seems to be self-defeating, but then again, ITC is just experimental anyway. Mm-hmm. I, of course, believe in it. I've had some pretty amazing things happen. My name has been said to me, curse words over the ghost box and stuff like that, location identification, stuff like that. As far as by name, a person's room, stuff like that. So I do believe there's a phenomenon going on there, but I'm not even about to speculate as to what it is.
Well, I think that goes back to why in the paranormal realm, or in paranormal investigation research, there really is no such thing as an expert. I mean, we're all working with just theory and conjecture, and you know, even with these nifty devices that are coming out, there's not a single person who can say, I am an expert. Hey, Andy, we have a question for you from Gots Anime Fever. He wants to know, do you have regulation lighting on what you can regulation lighting on what you can use on an investigation?
As far as videography and things like that?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, basically, it's location specific. We do what we can with where we're at, but we tend to go lights out like most people. But it, like I said, depends on location. We run infrared as well as UV,
right?
When it comes to full spectrum cameras and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I hope that answers.
What's that?
I hope that answered their question.
Yeah. The whole lights out thing for me is just a dramatic effect that they show on television. But do you have anything else, you know, that you wanted to share with us tonight?
Basically, I don't know how any other investigators out there's caseload has been, but ours has been through the roof. And I was going to ask you how you guys have been doing. Have you received a dramatic increase in caseload in the past two or three weeks?
I don't know, Vicky. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, your realm. Do we have anything that's, you know, on the horizon right now for us?
As far as actually going out to houses, I'm not really sure. We'd have to talk to Tony about that. But I have gotten quite a few requests for remote viewings.
Oh, okay.
You know, we try to put them in order of importance with the sensitives that we have on the group. We do remote readings. And actually, I believe Carolyn might have done one tonight. I'm not quite sure on that. But so our caseload is starting to pick up. Part of it was the holiday season. You know, people aren't home. They're busy. They're out. I think January we're gonna start seeing a pretty significant increase. There's a lot of stuff going on. You know, a lot of unexplained stuff that people need answers to.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I was just curious if it was a regional thing or if it was pretty much a widespread thing. Because, I mean, they all seem to be residentials that we're getting here lately and got no small amount of them. We've actually had to divert them to other groups in the area because we've got more than we can handle at the moment.
Yeah, well, we basically only really do residentials. So, I mean, we had that. What was that, a town hall or something a couple months back, Vic?
Yeah.
That was actually a really great investigation. Well, we just wanted to say, you know, thanks for coming on, Andy, you know, member of the Oklahoma City Ghost Club. And thanks for sharing about, you know, all the cool stuff that we got coming down the pike for us, you know, good little boy paranormal investigators.
Oh, anytime.
Boys and girls. Thanks, buddy.
I always love coming on the show. Real quick, if you get a chance, we're talking about this ECM ITC stuff. I believe it was yesterday. The Ovilus 2 just dropped on, the prototype just dropped on digital dowsing. So if you're curious, check that out.
How about, you know, let me just ask you real quick before we let you go. How much does something like this, would something like this run? Hello?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Andy?
Hey gang. I have a... Sorry for the interruption. We have a problem with the Skype, which is the communication method that we used. It says it's going to try and load Andy back up here.
There we go. Sorry
Andy,
about
you
that.
Back there, Andy? Oh, no, that's all right.
There we go.
I think my internet was lagging, so...
Oh. Are we...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. All right. Cool. So, all right. So you were talking about the ECM and ITC.
Oh yeah, I meant to say the Ovilus 2 has just dropped. I believe it was yesterday on digitaldowsing.com. So if you're interested in that, it actually has a screen that'll show the words, which is kind of important. So it alleviates its interpretation. So it's a hot new product, and who knows how that's going to work out. So, but if you're interested in that sort of thing and like experimenting, check that out.
Yeah, about how much would that run? You know, me if I ordered one.
The Ovilus 2 is a limited run, according to the website, and they're wanting $499 for it.
$499.
Yes, correct.
Ouch!
What a shocker. Well, I guess if I ever get my own television show, I'll be able to afford one day.
There you go. Indeed.
All right. Well, hey, thanks, Andy. Andy, you're going to stick around with the lightning round, right?
Sure, you bet.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye, Andy. It was nice meeting you.
Bye, Andy.
Nice to meet you, too. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Oh. Well, anyways, it's always good to talk to Andy. He always has something really great to share with us, some kind of new gadget. So
I like hearing the equipment part of it.
Yeah, I do too.
It's interesting.
Right.
Okay, gang, I think we'll go to a break now, and then we'll hear from Mindy Kinneman, who's going to do some quick reviews on Splice and Survival of the Dead. So
great.
We'll be right back.
Eric?
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. This is your host, Rick Hale, and I am here tonight with Vicki Gorski-Eichrell. She's my special guest host. Hey, Vicki.
It's Eichrell. But you can call me Vicki with two Ks.
Vicki with two Ks.
I'm like Madonna.
Or Prince, or Mary, whatever. Anyways, we have Mindy Kinnaman on the show. Hey, Mindy, what are you going to tell us about tonight?
What movies are you going to talk about? I've got Great. Splice and Survival of the Dead.
Now, I'm familiar with Splice, but not so much Survival of the Dead. Can we start with Survival of the Dead?
Sure. It is the newest film in the Of the Dead series by George Romero.
Okay.
And not even remotely close to being the best offering out of the whole film series. I was just not impressed with this film at all.
You know, what I want to know about George Romero is, what is with George Romero and the zombies? I mean, the guy's like a one-hit wonder with genres. Can't you come up with something new?
Well, he's done a few things outside of the genre. He helped do Creepshow, but yeah, it's been years since he's done something that wasn't specifically zombies.
Right.
And I really think that he's still trying to impart a message upon viewers, and he's not being as subtle as he did and as good as he did in the original Night of the Living Dead, and then, of course, Dawn of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting premise, focusing on whether or not you could kill your loved ones if they became zombies.
I could totally blow some of my cousins' brains out of their head. I definitely hear the message, Mindy.
I mean, it was interesting. It just poorly executed. And then, I'm sorry, but ever since he and Tom Savini stopped doing practical effects, and Tom Savini's moved on to do other projects, mm-hmm. just got stupid. I mean, like, there's a scene where a zombie's head gets blown off, and it is so incredibly fake, it's annoying. So, not impressed.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you like anything about this movie?
Well, it's a zombie film, so I did enjoy that.
You like your zombie. And Cheryl likes zombie movies, too, don't you, Cheryl?
I love
them. Our producer, Cheryl.
I love zombies as long as they're not, like, reality.
brains.
Hey, Mindy. Okay, I have to break in here and get your opinion, because you are like the ultimate zombie fan. What do you think of the new show on AMC, The Walking Dead?
Okay, I love the graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
Not as fond of the show, just because, and I've only seen one episode because I don't have cable, but it's slow. And I think that's why I had a hard time watching it.
Which episode did you see?
Oh, it was one where, is Rick the main cop? I think that's his name. After he has come back, met up with his wife and everything,
preparing
to go back in the city to get all of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I read, I have the first book, which is like the first eight graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the episodes that you've seen on TV, and I read it in an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
And this one episode just seemed to drag on and drag on. And then, of course, I didn't like some of the things they threw in. So it's okay. I'm not 100% impressed with it.
Well, I have not read the graphic novels. I've only seen the show. I am a fan of the show. But Chad did tell me that they changed up quite a bit from the novels. So, thanks.
I do recommend those. I mean, they're fun and very quick read.
Whenever it comes to zombie movies, it just, they seem so boring. You know, it's always the same thing that, you know, survivors are running down the street with zombies, blood and guts and brains and all that. It's just, it always seems like the same thing to me.
The only movie
I did like that was in the zombie genre was Shaun of the Dead. I laughed so hard.
What about Zombieland?
That was great.
Hated it.
Aw.
Boo. Hated it.
But anyways, the whole zombie thing.
I really don't. I just don't. I don't get the zombie thing. Possibly because I understand the whole idea behind the real zombie, according to according to voodoo and hoodoo and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But Mindy, if you hated this zombie movie so much, how about Splice? What about Splice?
You know, for as much as people trash Splice, I really liked it.
I think the whole idea of, you know, creating something genetically was, I always think that makes for a great horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Especially when, they're just that personal element. And like in this case, you get to see how each person's of the two main characters played by Sarah Polley and Adrian Brody, you kind of see how their backgrounds and everything come to affect the growth of this creature that they create. They call her mm-hmm. Dren. And I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a nice twist. I love that kind of stuff where it's something you wouldn't normally find and they bring it to life. And then of course they've got to worry about molding and shaping it. And then of course the unexpected jumps in as well.
Right.
And for as much as everybody slagged it off, because everyone I heard said it was great until the end, I actually liked the end. I thought it was a nice twist.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the greatest film, not of the year. Definitely not the greatest Guillermo del Toro produced film.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's produced some other great things, but it's not as bad as I feel everyone made it out to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole idea, like I said, of creating something genetically, creating it in a lab and it accidentally getting out and just killing everything in sight, that makes for a great horror flick. So, and I'm sure many of our listeners would agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, and Adrian Brody, you know, I really liked him in the movie Summer of Sam, you know, and also in the movie, you know, in other movies that he's, you know, been in, like The Piano, that was a really great flick, you know. But, so, Mindy, are you going to stick around with us tonight for the lightning round?
Sure.
Great. Cheryl, you want to get started with that then?
Sure, let's do it. I'm going to be Karen tonight because Karen's off at her son's band concert, so I get to ask everybody questions. I'm so excited.
What a slacker.
How dare she miss this show for her son's band?
Wait a minute, but then if she didn't miss it, I wouldn't be here.
That's true.
That's not true. A legitimate reason. I'm sorry.
Nice.
All right, we'll have to get on her next week when she's back.
Yes.
All right, let's get started. We're going to have Andy. Are you still with us?
Yes, can you
okay,
hear me?
Yep. And we got Mindy, Andy, Vicky, and Rick. So these questions are from Karen. And let's start off with the one about NASA. NASA announced, I believe it was last week, that scientists discovered an arsenic-based life form on Earth. It's mm-hmm. the only one of its kind ever found. So what do you think about the significance of this discovery? Let's Who's start right? with who wants First. To start? Andy?
I'll take it.
Okay.
I can't say I'm surprised by it. It's kind of exciting to think that, you know, we can broaden our scope in looking for different environments where life might thrive. And a friend of mine is really excited about it because he maintains that it's really important because it's at the the DNA level of the substitution. Rather than the metabolic level. I'm not quite sure what that means, but he sure is excited about it. So, I'll go with that.
Oh, okay. Mindy, what do you think?
I just think it continues to show that there's so much out there in this world alone that we have not even come close to discovering. Right. They just released the new list of new creatures that have been discovered this year, and, I mean, I think we will just continue as we expand upon the globe to just find more and more things like this that we never realized were out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Vicky, what do you think?
I have to agree with Mindy. I mean, I don't even think we've scratched the surface of what's out there. It's mind-boggling. And unfortunately, we won't discover even a quarter of it in our lifetimes. You know? So, yeah, I have to agree with Mindy.
And Rick, what do you think?
I'm kind of wondering if maybe this is even, you know, an Earth-bound organism. I mean, is this possibly, could it possibly be extraterrestrial? That's what I wonder.
Good question. Okay, let's go on to the next one. How about number two? The Royal Society conducted a poll in the UK and found that, among other things, more men believe in aliens than women do. What do you think accounts for this gender gap in alien belief? Andy. Oh.
Well, obviously, you know, men being from Mars and women from Venus, there's quite a gap there, so.
Nice.
I don't know, probably we're just wired that way. It's like I can't stand TLC or A&E, but my wife, I mean, if those channels were not on our satellite, it would not be fun around here, so I'm just going to go with fundamental difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Mindy?
Kind of off of that, I think women tend to be a little more practical. I don't know why, but, you know, we, at least in my perspective, I've got to see it to believe it. And so, but I'm also weird in that I do believe that there has to be something else out there. So I don't know if that's the 100% answer, but I do think that women tend to be more practical, and maybe that's part of our female instincts or mothering instincts or whatever, but.
Okay. Vicky, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think that men have an easier time believing in things that they can see. You know, there's documentation, there's pictures of aliens, that kind of thing. With the paranormal, I find that more women are accepting of the paranormal. I think women are easier to have blind faith, a little bit more of an imagination. Where, again, men, well, you know, I sound like, I don't know, I sound like I'm kind of prejudiced, don't I? don't mean to be pimping all the men out there, but I do. I think it's easier for women to have blind faith. I have come across with the paranormal, it seems women are more accepting with the alien part of it. I kind of noticed that, too. Men are more accepting of that, so
okay,
that's all I got to say about that.
Rick, what about you?
See, I think I would have to say that I agree with Vicky on that, because anytime you ever read one of these books about true hauntings, a man, you know, it always shows like the husband or the boyfriend or whatever is like, oh no, this can't possibly be happening.
The skeptic.
Yeah. I think it goes back to the thing that men are more visual with phenomenon, and it seems that. For me, aliens don't even fit into the paranormal, because this is, you know, this more fits in the realm of like pure science, you know, life out there. And I think that that's why men are more apt to believe in that than women.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, we go from that story to the next one, which is only a story Karen would find.
Yeah, really.
I love this one. Yeah. This is one of my favorites.
It's a great story. Let's see. The Japan Times reports that a Japanese company has been playing Mozart to bananas while they're in the ripening chamber, and that the music makes the fruit sweeter. The Mozart bananas, as they are called, actually sell better and for more money in Japan than the musicless bananas. Now, the question is, what would you play to your bananas to get them to taste the way you want? Andy.
Can I go first?
Okay, Vicky.
Leonard Skinner, absolutely.
Woo.
My banana would taste like Beanie Weenie. I would go Beanie Weenie and beer. It would be Leonard Skinner all the way.
Awesome. Andy?
Well, I certainly don't know if it'd make him taste better, but I'd just have to see what would happen if you played the Monkees.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Mindy?
Well, the smart aleck in me is thinking something like, oh, I don't know, the Grateful Dead. You're already going to get the munchies, so why not?
All right. How about Rick?
Well, I kind of wonder if, like, any 70s porno music from a John Holmes movie would make them longer and harder. I don't know. Kind of wondering about that. But Mozart bananas? Yeah, he's my favorite composer. I'd buy those.
Cool. All right. Next up is we have some snake news. Scientists have determined that snake fangs evolved from grooves in their teeth. What do you think vampire fangs evolved from? We'll start from Rick.
Robert Pattinson's dirty hair.
All right. Vicky.
For the first time in my life, I think I'm speechless. I don't know.
There are life forms in that dirty hair, guys. I just know it. They're waiting to evolve. Go ahead, Vicky. Sorry.
No, you're fine. The only thing I can think of is, you know, that white part of candy corn that you put on your teeth and make it look like you have fingers. That's the only thing I'm thinking, but that I got nothing. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Hey, it could be. All right. Who did we talk to? Andy? I'm sorry. I totally lost my place. Andy? Did we?
I'm gonna go with beef jerky. Copious amounts of beef jerky.
Sasquatch says.
All right, Mindy.
I was gonna say glitter. So. Since they vampires sparkle.
Yay. Well, we have a special question this week, and I'm going to start with Vicky on this one. Vicky, if you were allowed to name Rick's baby, what would you name him?
You know, this is easy. What the? Because then his name would be What the Hail. it just popped into my head, and I have to go with it.
Okay. Andy. Yeah. Andy, what about you?
I think I'll go with Egon.
Oh.
Nice.
Nice. I like it. Okay, Mindy?
I am, like, stumped. I've been sitting here trying to think of something witty, and I'm like, I just can't do it. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say he should be Robert Pattinson Hale. What I'm going to name him.
No.
Okay. All right, next question. Last Friday, and I'm pretty sure that might have been the Friday before since we missed last week's show, there was a sonic boom in Georgia, and no one is coming up with an explanation for what caused it, at least not that I heard of. Karen has a theory that it is the sonic boom from the mysterious missile launch off the coast of Los Angeles. What's the deal with all of these mystery things that no one can explain, and what do you think the government is hiding from us? Let's go with Mindy.
Now, I have to ask, is this sonic boom, is it have anything to do with the mysterious lights that were over Georgia the other day that they were showing on CNN?
I think this was before that, but I'm not
100%.
Interesting. But I'm not 100%, yeah.
Yeah, I think this goes back to my theory that, you know, there's something else out there, and I think people are playing with us. Not necessarily humans, but somebody's having some fun.
Okay, Andy, what do you think?
Well, a lot of times, I would say that sonic booms aren't necessarily very uncommon.
Right.
As are missile launches from Vandenberg Air Force Base, but the fact that the military has no explanation or cover story is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Vicky, what do you think?
Honestly, I there's other life forms out there. There's other things going on. As far as the government hiding something, people are such extremists that I think that if they did divulge everything that they do know,
mm-hmm.
there'd be a mass scare.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So you have to keep some things under wraps. Granted, we want to know, but you've got these got people that would take it to the extreme, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. Other life forms.
Okay, Rick, what do you think?
First off, the idea of a sonic boom going all the way from Los Angeles to Georgia is quite possibly one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. I'd have to go with, you know, that was probably all the meth labs in Georgia going up at one time. So I think that's quite possible. But do I think that the government is hiding stuff from us? Yeah, I think they're hiding from us that they're just as ignorant of what is really out there as we are.
Okay. All right, the next question is a Christmas question. So just to complete the full set of Christmas ornaments started with quote-unquote, our first Christmas and baby's first Christmas. An American company is now selling our last Christmas together ornament. What other awkward life moments would you like to see memorialized on a Christmas ornament? Mindy?
Sadly, this is from personal experience.
Uh-oh.
I would have to say your first flashing, accidental flashing, I might add.
Okay. Is that a story you want to go into, Mindy?
No. Nobody ever wants to share an accidental flashing.
All right, Andy, what about you?
How about the commemorating the first use of the little blue pill?
Nice.
This Christmas brought to you by Pfizer.
Vicky?
You know, there are so many. I really don't even know where to go with this one. Obviously, I would do, well, they covered that in the question. I would do the divorce from my first husband. I've got some, but I think they're X-rated.
X-rated ones would be very good.
Yeah, they would, wouldn't they? I don't know. I would like to commemorate my first piercing, maybe.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Rick, I'm sure you've got some doozies. What are they?
Honey, I just experienced with gay sex for the first time, and it's fabulous. I think I'm going to go with that.
Okay, that's a little awkward with the wife. Yeah. Okay.
I feel kind of dirty, Cheryl.
Well, it's good then that we're moving on to the next question. This is our final question, by the way. It's a long one, really. So let
that's
me get started.
What she said.
I walked right into that one, didn't I? Okay. I think it was last week, a Los Angeles auction house announced that it would auction off Lee Harvey Oswald's coffin. Ew. Several years ago, Oswald was exhumed due to rumors that he wasn't the one in the coffin, but rather he had been replaced with Folger's crystals. Sorry.
Wait a second. Folger's as in the coffee crystals?
I couldn't pull this one off. Sorry. I started laughing. No, wait. I mean, it looked like Russian spy. Sorry. Anyway, when they reburied Oswald, they put him in a new coffin, and the funeral home saved the old one. The coffin was buried for nearly 20 years with Oswald in it. Has some water damage and staining, and it suffered other damage as well. So which room of Karen's house should she put it in when she buys the coffin? Rick.
Use it as a dining room table. But you know what? That is an even that's even a more interesting conspiracy than the conspiracy of Oswald not killing Kennedy.
Isn't it though?
Yeah, I mean that's got way more drama to it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Vicky, what do you think Karen should use it as?
I think she should slap a piece of plexi on the top of it and use it as a buffet table in her dining room, or use it as a coffee table. You know, mm-hmm. Like a sofa table.
Yeah.
I totally would do that.
Okay. Andy, what do you think?
Kegerator.
There you go. Totally, dude.
Why not? Mindy.
Well, I remember once when I was a kid, the Weekly World News had the guy who had his wife in the plexiglass coffin right there as his coffee table. I'm totally going with that.
Wow. Yeah, coffee table seems the good choice right there. Chad, who's not on our lightning round, just messaged me that it should go into our panic room. So there you have it. All right, that wraps up the lightning round. So Rick and Vicky, that's...
Yes.
Yeah, tell us what we're going to have next week. What's going on?
So anyways, on next week's show, we're going to have Josie Varga, who is the author of Visits from Heaven. Apparently, it is a compilation of remarkable experiences that, you know, everyday people like you and I have had communicating in some way with loved ones who have passed on. And she has also nearly completed work on Visits to Heaven, which I guess is kind of a sequel focusing on near-death experience. So that's who we're going to be talking to next week. And I throw it over to Cheryl.
Cool. Yay. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I want to thank Bill Murphy, who came on and pre-recorded with us last week. And then Mindy and Andy, thanks so much for joining us again. I know we'll talk to you guys again soon.
And thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, Vicky, for stepping in for Karen. I think Vicky should just take over. What do you think?
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you so much for having me.
Vicky, you're hired.
If you have me again, I will be more talkative, I promise.
Oh,
Karen,
you're great.
Fired.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Come join us next weekend. For those listening live, stick around for the next Z-Talk radio show called Night Views.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks a lot. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.